Today we're going to be learning about David and his brothers. Today is May 14th, 2018. Indeed, an historic day.
Yes.
And David has I would say goes through five stages in his life. I would like to identify five specific stages, and we can relate those five stages to five different types of chapters in Tehillim. We would not be doing a justice to a study of David's life without comparing it to the Prakim in Tehillim that seem to represent the stages in his life. I'm not getting into authorship. There are some Prakim in Tehillim that seem to be post-exilic in nature. I won't get into the authorship of the whole book. That's not my purpose here. There are some aforesaim that say that chapters such as Mizmor LeDavid were written by someone else for David. You get it? Mizmor LeDavid. Okay, anyway. There are many chapters in this book whose heading describes events in David's life, especially between chapters 50 and 60. So if there's a chapter, let's say, that starts off a psalm to David that he sang when Natan the prophet rebuked him for what he did with Bathsheba. So after reading the story of Bathsheba, someone should read this chapter. It's very much nogea to David's sentiment, his feelings, his thoughts regarding those events. Okay. So the first stage is obviously his youth. We're going in order of his life. Right, we will learn, especially from Prakim and Tehillim, but also from narratives in Sefer Shmuel, that David's early years were not positive for him. They were very difficult. They were troubling. Right, I can point to a number of Prakim and Tehillim, whole entire Prakim actually, but some specific psukim. For instance, if you look at Tehillim chapter 129, now you have to have the whole Tehillim there. No, Jenny, you won't reach 129 with that one. You have to take a full Tanakh. Or a full Tehillim. Okay. Tehillim chapter 129 begins, Shir Hamalos Rabas Tsraruni Minu Urai Yomar No Yisrael. Rabas Tsraruni Minu Urai Gamlo Yachluli.
What's the number?
129. There are English Tanakhs down there. So he refers to the suffering and the pain, the affliction that he suffered from his early youth. Now we are introduced to David. The dates, the time period is dependent on your commentary, on your Seder Olam. It all depends on how many years Shaul was king, right? The Seder Olam says that Shaul served altogether only 2 years. That is a very, very difficult position. Very difficult. Ravanel, in the beginning of chapter 13 of Shmuel Aleph, points to numerous difficulties with this position. It's more likely that Shaul was king for about 20 years. Right? L'may nafka mina, because David is 30 when he becomes king. Right? If Shaul ruled only 2 years, then David was somewhere between 28 and 29 when he killed Goliath.
Yes.
That's very, very difficult. There seem to be many years in between. David is more like a teenager when he kills Goliath. But be that as it may, for him to say, in my youth, I suffered many indignities, I suffered many problems, much tsar, rabas tsaruni, many people gave me affliction in my youth. Really? That's David talking in Tehillim. Now, there are additional psukim in Tehillim, such as, turn to chapter 69, verse 9. Chapter 69, verse 9. Samach Tes, Tes. 69:9. You can look this up afterwards if you'd like. Yes. Muzar hoyisi le'echoy. I was made to be a stranger to my brothers. V'nochri livnei imi. And I was an outsider.
69:9.
Well, then you'll find it at the end of that sentence. Can you pass the quote? Thanks. So he says, Muzar hayisi le'echai. I was estranged, or I was a stranger before my brothers. Mm-hmm. I was made to be a stranger for the sons of my mother. Okay. Now, you don't have to turn to this part. I should have just copied that. Okay, just listen. If it takes too long for you to find these psukim, then just listen, please. Okay. Verse 69:9. Just write it down. You can look it up later. He says, I was a stranger to my brothers. I was made to be estranged from the sons of my mother. It's a parallel. Mm-hmm. Okay. He says, the jealousy of the household devoured me. Okay. Now, perhaps a more famous pasuk that you're all familiar is, Even ma'asu habonim ha'isal rosh pina. The stone that was despised by the brothers.
Mm-hmm. Right? This one?
Okay, became the cornerstone. That's in Tehillim. No. Don't bother looking up. We're going to just read one narrative, and that'll be enough. Okay. Or chapter 71, verse 6 reads, Olai nismachti mibeten mimei imi ata gozi b'chati lesi tamid. I relied on you, God, from my earliest years, from the time I came from the womb. I relied on you to help me. This is spoken by someone who has a miserable youth. This is spoken to someone from the very earliest days. God, I relied only on you as they were beating me up in the schoolyard, and as I was. I mean, I don't know who has an experience like this.
He was known as a mantra.
Yes, amazing. That's an interesting thing, is that from these psukim can also determine that from his earliest days he looked up to God for his help. Some kids who get bullied in the schoolyard look to some other friends for help. So he had no one to turn to but God. In fact, it was so bad, this is maybe the most famous of all the psukim, besides the Tehillim one, because we say it during Chodesh Elul. You say chapter 27, it's known as L'David Hashem Ori, right? You're familiar with it? Right? So in the middle of that chapter, it's chapter 27,
what
verse
is
9.
Shmuel? What is
Till. We're in Till.
We're still in Till.
Okay. Verse 9?
27:9.
Pasuk says, the pasuk says, Al taster panecha mimeni. Don't hide your face from me, God. In other words, just like other statements of that sort. The next pasuk says, "Ki avi v'imi azavuni, v'Hashem ya'asfeni." Because even as my mother and my father, or perhaps even if my mother and my father would reject me, ki avi v'imi azavuni. Usually, when one brother is being bullied by other brothers, hopefully a parent will step in and say, hey, what's going on? You protect them. No, my parents did not do that for me.
Oh, that's in the Wednesday.
That's in the David Hashem Ori B'Yishi, that we say in Chodesh Elul. You might be referring to different psukim.
I am, yeah, the one that says, my parents, although my parents have abandoned me. In the Wednesday, Yeah,
I'll find it.
Could this just be his perception rather than actually what happened?
No.
Whatever a person writes is his perception,
no.
But when you get to be see all these psukim, we have to what we'll do after we read maybe one or two more. We're going to see the narrative of Shmuel to see what might all this be capturing. Okay, right. So when he refers to this difficult youth, now.
Can I ask you when he says, "Don't hide your face from me, Hashem"? If my mother and father reject me, then what else did he say?
So he said, "I know that God would bring me in."
Oh,
right. In other words, God, if you hide your face from me, well, my brothers despise me. My parents aren't any help. Who else can I turn to but you? Okay.
They separated because they were afraid their union wasn't correct, and she.
Okay. Let's.
Okay. All right.
So we'll.
You'll get there, right?
We'll see. We'll see. There's a medrash about this, but. Okay, it's hard to understand. You know, God chooses this man to be king.
Right.
At this time, God is still choosing kings. Right? They're not a popular choice from the people. God chooses kings. Right? That in itself is a little difficulty. In the Torah, it says, "Som tosim alecha melech, right? Asher Hashem alokecha nosein lecha." Point a king that God will give to you. Right? So that means the one that God chooses, stand behind that person.
But
then the next pasuk, they'll know because there's a prophet that tells them.
Mm-hmm.
The next pasuk seems to contradict this by saying, "Lo tuchal lo seis alecha ish nachriya shelo mikerav achecha." Don't choose someone who's not from amongst your brethren. Which was, by the way, a popular thing in the ancient world. They used to take a king from another nation who would not have any allegiance. He couldn't be bought. He didn't have any particular tribe that he would... Okay, so the Torah says, don't do that. That person won't have an allegiance to Torah, right? But wait a second. If God is doing the choosing, why is he telling us, don't choose someone? God, you're doing the choosing. Where are we in a position to choose? So Ramban asks this question, and he says, okay, if there ever comes a time in history where we are choosing, and we did, look and say from Elohim, there's a pasuk in Hosea, Heim himlichu v'lo mimeni. Right, so if you are going to make a choice, make sure that it's in the mikarev achach. All right. Anyway, so in other words, I'm just stressing this point. God chooses this person; he's the best person for the job. You see, Shaul was not the best person for the job because you always get the king you deserve. And Bnei Yisrael at the time of Shaul did not deserve a better king than Shaul because the way they asked for a king. Right. Remember, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to have a king. So it can't be that just asking for a king is wrong. It's the question of what they wanted the king for that was wrong. Right? Kefal Goyim, but those words appear in the Torah too. It could be that what they did wrong was...
They
want
to replace Shmuel.
Or they said, Tna lanu melech l'shofteinu kefal Goyim. That's wrong. There's an executive branch, and there's the judicial branch. And they wanted, like the nations of the world, give their king too much power.
Right.
That's why the pasuk, right after they ask, it says this, the next pasuk says, Vayera be'enei Shmuel ka'asher sha'al ha'om tznolanu melech l'shofteinu. It doesn't repeat Kechol HaGoyim, because Kechol HaGoyim did not necessarily anger him. What angered him, remember, it could be personal, like the Ramban says, because he's the shofet. Get us a king to we want to fire you and get your replacement and call him something else. That's not nice. After all, he's done for them, right? Shmuel was the most well-rounded leader that the Israelites had ever had. He was Moshe, Aaron, and Yahushua all in one. He was their military leader. He led them in battle. He was their Kohen Gadol. Eli wasn't around, so he wasn't a Kohen, but he served the spiritual leadership that was lacking. Without a Kohen Gadol, and he was certainly the religious leader, and he was their prophet and their shofet. He was everything for them,
so
and, they rejected. They, that's wrong. They rejected him for the wrong reasons.
Why?
The Yerushalmi, I can't. I'm just saying it's wrong.
That's the way it works in Shmuel. When the priests are corrupt, God speaks to Shmuel, and he's the new leadership.
So
the story makes a very clear distinction. One line goes against the Ish Elohim comes and very strongly says how much they're going to punish the priesthood, and then the next sentence is Banar Shmuel Gadel.
Yes, so you see how it goes from Eli to Shmuel, from Shmuel to Shaul, from Shaul to David. Each one, there's a tragedy in the middle of all that, is that in each one, it starts off that the son, there's no son that deserves to take over. Eli loses his position because his sons are so evil. Mm-hmm. Shmuel, when they ask Shmuel to get them a king, they first say to him, Shmuel, you're old. Mm-hmm. We would ask you to be king, but you're old. How much longer are you going to live? Mm-hmm. And we'd ask you to be king, but your sons have gone on the wrong path. We don't want them to be king after you. It's obvious the difference between the Shofet and the Melech is that when the Shofet dies, there is a traditional such a lack of leadership in Sefer Shoftim that they just revert back to their bad ways. Mm-hmm. The cycle over and over and over again. They don't want that break in leadership. They want, because a king, when a king dies, it's God save the king, long live the king. There's no break, right? So when Shmuel also perhaps would have been asked to be king, but his sons were also bad. So Eli loses out because of his sons. Shmuel loses out because of his sons. Right? David has trouble with his sons too, for sure. You'll see in Shmuel Vase. But look at Shaul. Shaul tells David, don't you realize that as long as David is alive, you
Jonathan.
Will never...
Jonathan, yeah.
Jonathan, you will never become king. So it's a terrible irony because for the first time, really, I mean, all great leaders have had trouble with the continuation of their leadership, and finally there's someone who has a worthwhile king. Adrabah, Yonatan is even better king material than Shaul.
Yes.
So the irony is that Yonatan, who doesn't have the chutzpah to tell his father, he says, Dad, the reason I'm not becoming the next king has nothing to do with David, it has to do with you, right?
He
would never say that to his father. But the reader can say that. The reader knows that. That it's not because of David that your son is not being the next king. It's because of you. So what happens situation that pervades much of the narratives earlier in the Torah as well, and right now we're just looking at David's early years, and we see that they're difficult. But there's one story. Now let's go into Shmuel Aleph.
By the way, I just want to say in defense, you could say that the sentence l'shaftenu doesn't mean the judicial. They're using the word l'shaftenu in the sense of the shofting. To be the
military or the protector. Yes, like a Moshia is parallel to a shofet. Yes, but that I agree that that's a possible way. But the Ramban certainly does not read it that way. He says that what hurt him was they're telling me to replace me with someone who's doing what I've been doing, which is to be the shofet, the shoftenu. It's the Ran. Famous drasha Saran, drasha Yudalef. Where he says that they were trying to be like the Goyim in what way? To give to mix the judicial with the executive in a way that the Torah never meant.
In terms of the later commentaries, but in terms of the context, the biblical context, the word shoftim means the person who was the shofet, was the person who was the military leader.
Okay, then we have
the shoftenu would be to
then you have to do you have to try to do as good a job as Ramban and the Ran for why the narrative says Vayera be'enei Shmuel. This is a direct quote. Ka'asher sha'al ha'am tunat lanu melech. Why did you put that extra word l'shoftenu in there?
I say l'shoftenu is to be like the shoftim. That's
good,
why.
Good.
They
okay,
ask,
so then why does that anger Shmuel?
That's why they ask the shofet.
Why does that anger Shmuel? I understand, but why does that anger Shmuel? If it's a mitzvah in the Torah,
because
that's the real.
Shmuel doesn't want a king at all.
Shmuel could be.
Goy Kadosh. The debate is Goy Kadosh or Goy Kachol HaGoyim.
Yes, but
I'm asking of a genius.
I know, but the Torah commands it. This is a mitzvah in the Torah.
Afterward, at first the debate is Goy Kadosh.
I agree. Okay, I want to just make sure you have an answer to give. Is that when the Torah commands the king in Parshas Shoftim, the command to have a king, right, is just expressed in an unusual way in the Torah. It's different than all other mitzvahs. So that there is a way out to say, even, you know, in Philo of Alexandria, this is the only source I found where something like this appears. In Philo of Alexandria, he says that when the Israelites asked for a king, and Shmuel said, was angry, they took out a Sefer Devarim and they showed him, Shmuel, what's going on here? It says, Vayakidu Amarta. So Simol Amelach Kecholo Gemasher Svivo Sidus in Perek 17, chapter 17 of Devarim, is one of the 613 mitzvahs is to appoint a king. However, the appointment of a king is only, it's different than all other mitzvahs of the Torah. It says, when you come to the land of Israel, that you inherit it, you reside in it, and you say, I'd like to have a king like all the other nations around me. Then Som Tusim Alech Melech. So the point is that at this time, they did not need such a king because Shmuel was serving all of those purposes for them. So it hurt him that they wanted him to appoint that person to effectively replace him, but also to do something they did not need at that time. So they got the king they deserved. In the Yerushalmi, in Maseches Sota, it says, it describes Shaul mishichmo v'amala gavoa mikol ha'am. From his head and shoulders, he was taller than everybody else. And that's all you could say about him. He was tall. Nice. Yeah. Now, that is in stark contrast to the Bavli that says that Shaul was a great moral specimen, much greater than David. But I will tell you this, that I understand what Yerushalmi is saying, because when this is a text now that we'll be studying, is that when Shaul... When Hashem tells Shmuel to choose a king from the household of Yishai, mm-hmm. and his first choice is Yishai's oldest son, God says, I don't want that one. I despise him, which is strange. Yeah. I despise him. Do not look, now I quote again, Al tireh el mar'ehu. Ve'el gvoha komaso. Do not, that didn't work well the first time. Right? Remember Shmuel? You chose, and you described Shaul the first time for his height. Don't choose a king because he's head and shoulders above. So that's where we stand. So I want to go, just have, hold on to your questions for a second while everyone else is turning to chapter 16. Right?
No.
Chapter 16, spoiler. Verse 1.
Spoiler. Yes.
Chapter 16. Okay.
In Shmuel Aleph?
Yes, chapter 16, verse 1. Yes, now the questions.
Is there some place that says that he had the potential of being Moshiach?
Shaul? Not familiar with that. You may be thinking of a medrash that says that Shimshon had the potential to be Moshiach. That when Yaakov saw Shimshon, he saw Moshiach. That's why he said Lishuascha Kivisi Hashem right after the bracha of Dun. I'm not familiar with such a drash about Shmuel. Yes,
Rabbi Rishkin used to say that our kingship was not a monarchy, and he coined the word halakocracy. That's how the king was chosen. It was not necessarily a song.
Okay, that's from the Gemara. Okay, so okay, good. Then it's a theocracy. Okay, so we're going to be looking just a few psukim at a text that refers to David's home life. Mm-hmm. Right? We have a picture of David's life at home. Right? Now, how old he is here depends on how long Shaul served as king, mm-hmm. and how long he's been king. I would just say, Abravanel has a large treatment of this in Shmuel Aleph chapter 13, and he suggests that David is a teenager here. He's 17 or 18 years old. Mm-hmm. He's called a lad. Mm-hmm. All right, but you could be. Lots of different ages are called lads in the Tanakh.
Yes.
Right? Someone at the age of 53 is called a lad. Someone is called, Yosef is called a lad at 17. All right, but here is the point. After Shaul messed up as king, so God says to Shaul's, to Shmuel, I need a correction. I'm sorry, I regret appointing Shaul. Not that God ever regrets anything, but the people got exactly what they deserved, which wasn't the best thing. And Hashem tells Shmuel to go to the house of Yishai, one of his sons, as the next king. Now, the first time that Shmuel appointed a king, the prophecy was extremely crisp about what he was supposed to do. God told him, tomorrow someone is going to come to you and ask for lost donkeys. That man is the next king of Israel. That's going to be the first king of Israel. Very simple. So when someone came the next day and asked for donkeys, he knew what to do. Right? You with me? The only problem is that when the man came to ask for donkeys, he said, where is the Roeh around here? I heard that there's a seer who can tell me about the donkeys. So he said, he answered, I don't know what else should Shmuel answer, but he said, Anochi HaRoeh. I am the Roeh. Mm-hmm. So Chazal say that he's punished that's in the next time. Because if you contrast the way that he chooses a king the first time, which was so clear and so obvious, and he's so on top of his game, and he's perfect. I mean, there's no mistake, and it's so the storyline goes so smoothly. But the second time, not so much. Not so much.
Until the oil.
So let's see what's going on. So Shmuel is told to appoint the replacement. Okay? And he tells him to go to Yishai's house. All right? Now Yishai and I take over from the Gemara in the seventh parak in Maseches Yevamos. Yishai is the grandson of a Moabite.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
Does Shmuel know that? It says that Yishai was Boba Anoshim. Means he came with around men. He was known. So I'm just telling you from the Agadah of the Gemara. Mm-hmm. The Agadah of the Gemara says that this was pushed through by Boaz, maybe a little too much ham fist. If you know what I mean, ham-fisted, he like pushed it through quickly, right? He took 10 men to publicize it. Shmuel is very smart, according to the Medrash, that he wrote the book in order to identify David. Of course, that's the end of the book. David is the last word in the book. But what he does is he mentions the opposition in the book. Mm-hmm. He doesn't skip over the fact that there was opposition in my time, right? This is a political thing to do. You show, if you think someone is going to oppose you, you show, that's old news. Someone already opposed me, right? Mm-hmm. There's a guy, Ploni Almoni, there's probably others like him, who thought this is not a good idea. Penashchisis nachlasi. But I got rid of that. That opinion did not hold weight. No one else objected like that there. I took 10 men. Mm-hmm. We learned Birchus Chasnim. He took the 10 men to publicize the issue. Now everybody knows we did this. Shine, goodbye. But the situation still manifests itself here, and we're about to go to the next parak shortly with what David does with Goliath. So when Shmuel starts, it's sort of like a Cinderella story, right?
Yeah.
Someone in this house, someone in the nation who has a slipper, whose foot fits this slipper, is going to be the next princess,
when
right?
When the oil jumps out of the jar.
So here comes Shmuel with the slipper. Right?
Do you mean Cinderella's like the
other
story?
I do mean that. Okay. So all right, there's some tangential great material here about what way is Shmuel afraid of Shaul? What was God's response? Chazal say that the response was lie. Mutu l'shanos mipnei ha-shalom, says the Gemara in Yevamos. Right? The heter comes from Yosef's brothers who lied when they said our father, etc., thinks that you'll, don't kill us. If Yaakov knew that Yosef was sold and he was choshesh that Yosef would kill him, it would probably make more sense for Yaakov to tell that to Yosef and directly instead of telling your brothers to tell that to Yosef. Yaakov never said that. And the Gemara admits.
So mutar l'shanos b'pnei Hashalom. Then it says mitzvah l'shanos b'pnei Hashalom. What's that? What's that case? If anybody asks you why you're here in Beis Lechem, lie. Tell them you're going there to bring a korban, right? And then it says God Himself lied for the sake of Shalom. What was that? With Avram and Sarah. Good.
When what?
More elaborate. Right. When Sarah said, "My husband's too old."
Right.
All right. So the Radak, however, says that the whole purpose of the korban was to be like Avor lifnei ha'am, od ma'atu skaluni. So Hashem says, Moshe, they can't stone you. I won't let them. Stop worrying, right? Od ma'atu skaluni, Avor lifnei ha'am. You walk right in front of them, see what they'll be able to do. So Radak says that what Hashem was telling Shmuel is exact opposite of what the Gemara says. He says, you're afraid of Shaul? Call attention to yourself. Let everybody know you're there. Bring a korban. And if they ask you why you're there, don't be afraid. I'm telling you to do this. Shluchei mitzvah sein ani zokin. The Radak admits this is not like the Gemara. That's a Gemara in Yevamos. There's another Gemara in Pesachim that says that shluchei mitzvah sein ani zokin. Yeah, but that's when there's no ischazik sakana. But when there's a sakana, you can't just rely on God. All right. Okay, but those are the two sides with that. Let's go. Let's turn now. He comes into the house. And he tells Yishai this great news, right?
And he lines up the boys.
And he lines up the boys.
Can you say that when there's what, we can't rely on Hashem?
When there's danger.
Right.
When there's danger, don't right. You can't rely on Hashem.
Then who are you going to rely on?
I mean, you can't just say, okay, danger.
If you lie, you're
here I am. When Yirmiyahu told Tzidkiyahu to surrender,
yeah.
Right? In Lamed Zayin, and he says, you know, my generals are going to ask you what you told me to do. I know that if you tell them that you asked me to surrender, they will kill you. So when he comes out and they say, what did you just tell the king? So he should say, I shouldn't be afraid. God told me back in chapter 1, I'll be with you, I'll be a choma, they'll try to kill you, I won't let them. So go stand up to them and say, make my day, I said to surrender. What are you going to do about that? Right? You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
like David, he says God's crowned him, Shmuel crowns him king, but yet he goes through every strategy to avoid death from Shaul. Why? Just say, hey, I'm the next king. Make my day, Shaul. Go ahead. Shoot an arrow at me, it'll go like this and turn right up because I have to be king. Right? No. Right? When they asked Yirmiyahu, what did you tell Tzidkiyahu when you were there? I begged him not to send me back to jail.
Too much pressure.
That's not the low road. He just knows that if I say what the king just said, they'll kill me and I will make a lie out of God's promise. A real prophet knows that. It's foolish to just say, well, God told me he'll stand up for me. I can say whatever I want to these guys. Right? No. Okay. All right.
So
the boys line up and he sees the first one. Okay. And what happens? Ach neged Hashem Mishicho. We stand before God's chosen.
Yeah, right.
All you brothers,
no
says
way.
He. Says he in pasuk hey,
yeah.
Pasuk vav. Now let's look at pasuk zayin. V'yemar Hashem el Shmuel. Ostensibly, only Shmuel heard this. God comes into his head in front of everybody, and he says, Shmuel, al ta beit el marayu vel gvoa komaso. How did that work the first time? Right, mamish. It's a mamish a patch at. Mishichmo v'amala gavoa mikol ha'am, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned that Yushalmi before, that's all we could say about him. Again, the Yushalmi and the Bavli have very, very different positions about the morality of Shmuel. Yushalmi is very negative in Maseches Sota. The Bavli in Gemara in the beginning of the second parak in Yuma says that David was no comparison, couldn't light a candle to the morality of Shmuel. Because the Gemara in Yuma there is trying, that's where the beautiful statement that says, Ein ben David ba ela im yeshlo kupa shel shrotzim munach mitzavaro. Mashiach must have bones in his closet. By the way, that stands in contrast to the way the Rambam position. Rambam says Mashiach is even better than the Art Scroll series, the history stories about all the Gedolim that never did anything wrong in their whole lives. But what does the Gemara mean? Mashiach must have like skeletons in the closet or bone, I don't know, a can of worms, however you would.
He has to fall and then get up.
Evan Masu Abonim Haisala Rosh Pina. He has to be B'nai Imini Nicharubi B'nai.
You have to be tested.
You have to be a human.
Like iron. Pasuk is,
Moshiach has to save everybody else.
Yes, what?
He has to have fallen. Shava yipol tzadik v'kama. Not seven times, but he has to have fallen. He has to have been able to say chotasi like David does,
right.
Because when you're so perfect, this is where the Gemara talks about this. When it says ben shana shaul b'malcho ushnatayim molach al Yisrael, that's where the Seder Olam says that Shaul was king for 2 years. That's the pasuk I mentioned in the beginning of this year, Perikud Gimel pasuk Aleph, where the Abravanel goes through this whole historical discussion of how many years Shaul was king. So, but the Gemara darshins that Shaul was like a 1 year old. He was so innocent. Such perfection. He didn't taste any sin like a 1 year old. But when you think of yourself so perfect and things start going wrong, you face none of that. Your perfection remains. He becomes a different person as soon as things start to go wrong.
He wasn't tested earlier then.
He was.
Certainly not like David.
And you if you're like that, then you can't handle things when they go wrong.
Correct. Now, by the way, David will this is in chapter 16. In chapter 17, David will indicate that he felt from his own youth that he was set aside for something big. That's necessary, right? I'm not saying to be a king in Israel, you have to be like a narcissist, like to be a president of this country. But he did feel that there was something, because when he goes for the job interview of giant slayer,
right?
He has to be so convincing to Shaul
that he can do
right over that he can do this. We'll get to that. And maybe not this week, but certainly next week. Okay, but let's see back. Hashem says, "Al tabet el marehu ve el gvoa koma." So, this didn't work well the first time when we chose a king for this, right? Ki ma'astihu. Wow. Why do I ma'astihu? That's a tough word.
He's guarded it.
Right? Now, it's true that the chapter did begin, Ad Mosaya Tam Isabel al Sha'ul Va'anim Ma'astiv Mimloch al Yisrael.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ma'as, Mem Aleph Samach, it's to despise, right?
When, yeah.
Mius, Azam Mius, right? In Yiddish, it really means something despicable, right? Tell me, Doctor, what is Mius? Give me the English word.
It's a mius guy.
Mius guy. Usually,
it's ugly.
Person. Ugly. I knew you were going to say that.
Mius guy. It's really ugly.
So then it's also going for what you even want to do. You ask me. I don't care about him. I did it so much. I don't care what you're doing. You ask me a lot.
Okay. All right. But maastiv means I don't just hate this. Mius maastiv is more than hate. So, okay, so, but it means that, is it rejected? Okay, so he uses this word because he rejects Shaul in the beginning of the parak, and he uses the same word for rejecting Eliyav at this point, right? I'm taking you now on a tangent. Remember where we are. Put your post-it right there. But you just have to turn about one page, right? Turn to Parak Yud Zayin. Okay. So here is where they're fighting Goliath. The Philistines decide, let's have a different kind of warfare. I believe there's some science fiction about this, and if there is a Star Trek person here, I believe there's a Star Trek episode also where they come up with a device, a type of battle, where they don't actually fight wars, but they fight like virtual wars.
Yes, right. There's also Kirk against the commander.
Kirk against the commander, that big monster that's the David, right? The David and Goliath.
Yeah.
So David with Kirk with ingenuity, with those diamonds, where he shoots him from that thing, so defeats the enemy. And then when he has it, but the difference is that with David, slices off the head of the enemy, but Kirk chooses not to kill the guy.
To show
Rahmanis to kill. But Mistama, Goliath was already dead when David slid his cut off his head. Because to get as tall as the Tanakh makes him, right, you have to be suffering from what's called giantism.
Pituitary glands keep
growing. And this is an amazing thing, is that the whole body keeps growing and it's you can't walk anymore after a certain point. But there's not, it's not an Achilles heel. this right here.
That'll kill you.
Starts pulling apart that you can kill him just by pushing hard with your finger. Uh-huh. That's how bad it is. If it reaches a certain stage. Mm-hmm. He was dead. That's why he falls forward. There's a lot of this science was with Kennedy because they wanted to know which way did they shoot him because he was dead instantly. So you think he should move in the direction of the shot. Instead, he moved in the other direction because it killed him instantly. He just dropped. So I think that's what happened to Goliath. David hit him like this, and if it didn't kill him instantly, he might do something like, you know, and then fall 2 seconds later. No, he had no brain to do this.
Wow.
After being hit. It killed him instantly. And it says in Tanakh that it was Shakua, it went into his head. Mm-hmm. Because that someone who suffers from this disease, look it up, Google giantism. What part of the body can no longer take the growth is right here, right in the middle of the forehead. So David does cut off his head because he wants to hold it up for everybody to show the... I have a painting of this from Isaac Doré. He's showing up the head. But anyway, let's get back to our story. David has to convince Shaul that I can do this. Right? So he has to point to something that he knows. How old is David now? Again, it depends on Adab Ravenel. But I side with somewhere in late teens, mid to late teens. Okay? That's what the Bravanel says. And early on, when he reaches the camp of Goliath, remember, anyone want to tell me why is he there? To bring food to the brothers. He's not there as a combatant, right? Mm-hmm. He's there to bring some provisions, right? So when he shows up to bring the provisions, right, his father tells him, listen, your brothers are in a tight spot, right? I was just, my son lives right near in Beit Shemesh where you can, Mamish point out all these places and the Christian groups, you know, they take people to this valley where they you know, where he's saying that the war was. And you see that someone in the tourism department must, they have hundreds and hundreds, I've seen them there, of round rocks that are all strewn all over the place. And they tell the tourists to go and take one of the rocks. This may be the rock that David used to kill Goliath. Take it home. Right? So maybe they're selling it for a couple of bucks each. I don't know. But they're looking at, in that valley, there's hundreds and hundreds of these round rocks. Right? So David is goes to bring the food. And he hears that, you know, no one wants to do this Kirk against... Well, is the other one named?
The Gordon.
Oh, yeah? Oh, wow. Of course.
I mean, that's what the...
Yeah. Okay, good. So no one wants to you know, it's a suicide mission for anybody else, right? They're all frightened and their knees are knocking, all right? So David hears... He doesn't hear it from the king because he's not going to actually get an audience with the king now. But he hears people talking while he's bringing the food, right? And they say, "Vayomer Ish Yisrael." I'm reading Yud Zayin Chafei 17:25. Harisem ha'ish ha'oleh hazeki lecharefis Yisrael oleve ha'yoha ish asher yakenu yasrenu ha'melech osher gadol. The one who kills this guy become very rich. Vesbito yiten lo, and his daughter. He'll get to marry his daughter. The ace base of the king's daughter. The ace base of Yaseh Chofshi B'Yisrael. Apparently they had taxes there too. He'll have a free house, meaning they probably had some kind of property tax, right? So, or some, there are other interpretations of what this means, and that's too tangential for us now, excuse me. So David hears all of this, okay? And he starts to talk about possibly getting in on this action. Right. All right. So, and he's saying, "Who is this Plishti? This uncircumcised one? Plishtim." The Rambam points out in the Mor Nevuchim are the nation most called for their uncircumcised status. Doesn't that sound familiar? Right. The Plishtim are always called the Arelim. Right. Huh. So it fits with the Rambam. The Rambam says that the Orel is removed for us to be in charge of our desire. That we should be in charge to curtail such a desire. The Philistines, who were the most Philistine of all ancient nations, as you can imagine, with a small p, that's an English word,
were not in control of this part of their desire at all. So they're known as the Arelim, right? We refer to Arelim in our davening as a reference to the nations. Okay, so anyway, so here, so he said, so David starts to inquire about this deal, about what the slayer of Goliath will get. So now let's open up to Pasuk Chavches. Vayishma Eliyav Achiv Hagadol. So the oldest brother, who's getting food? Come on, David's bringing him food. Right? You see, though, if you look at what he brought, you know, there's a significant amount of food, right? And Eliyav hears this, and instead of saying, oh, thanks, David, we were so hungry, we're thirsty, thank you very much. Instead, look what's going on here. Vayichar af Eliyav b'David. Eliyav is angry with his brother. Vayomer, lama ze yoradata. Yoradata, we discussed this on Shabbos, about the shorish of yorad. What does he have to say the word yorad as if though it means you're lowering yourself, you're bringing yourself down, you're misbehaving? Why did you come down here? Valmi notashta ma'at hatzon ha'ina b'midbar. You don't belong here. You belong with the sheep.
Right.
Right? We belong in battle. You belong with the sheep. Who are you to be here? Right? So he says, Ani yodati es zedoncha v'esro levavecha ki leman ra'us ha'milchama yoradit. Yoradita. Again, he uses the lashon to lower yourself. I know the evil of your heart. You have nothing but zadon in your heart. Zadon? You're cooking up something here. You're just imagining your great grandeur for yourself. I know how we used to talk when you were younger. Right? There's a bit of Yosef in David.
Like
he knows that there's something. I didn't even get to that yet. Because when he will, we have to do this next week, we're not going to get to it. When he is going to interview for the job of Goliath Slayer, he's going to convince Shaul about something he knew about himself that was similar to Yosef. Now, I want to leave you wanting more, when Yosef, something very beautiful, Yosef is 17 years old,
right.
Is favored by his father, and the bad reports, I mean, that's just, I don't know where that's coming from. But at 17, you have to know that to tell your brothers about your dreams of ruling over them is just something you have to stop doing at 7, 8, 8 years old. A 9-year-old knows that. Who here remembers a teacher's pet?
No.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
That kid gets beaten up every day at recess,
yes.
No?
Right.
Okay? Don't you know at 17 you don't?
Sometimes
stop with
learn.
The dreams. I mean, one can imagine the same way that Sarah protected Yitzchak from Yishmael and Rivka protected Yaakov from Esav. There's no Rochel here in our story to protect Yosef. So it just, everything blows up. And he tells them his dreams. What? That's crazy. Why are you doing this? The answer is in the Haftorah. The Haftorah of Parshas Vayeshev is arguably the least connected of all the Haftorahs of the year. It just connects because Amos says, Al Mechram Ba'Kesef Tzadik, Ve'Evyon Ba'Avur Na'alayim. Even Rashi on the Pasuk in Amos says this is not talking about Yosef. It's talking about the horrible practice in the northern tribes at the time to sell people into slavery because they can't pay back debt. But there's a very strong tradition that this is talking about Yosef, hence the Targum Yonasan in Parshas Vayeshev that he was sold for shoes, because this is a reference to Yosef. The fact, though, is that the Haftorah is amazing. It talks about a man and his son going to the same woman.
Oh, wow.
It's Yehuda and his sons.
Right.
The Haftorah talks about Bigdei Anushim, clothing that is the topic of violence. Isn't that what they did?
The coat.
Yosef's coat, right?
Yeah.
And there's more. But the biggest connection is, the last pasuk of the Haftorah is, Hashem diber mi lo yinovei. God has spoken. And if you really think God has spoken to you, you have to share it.
There you go.
Yosef believed that he was giving prophecy. He believed he had something to tell his brothers. He always wanted to be helpful. The Sforno says this on the Pasuk. V'hu na'ar es b'nei Bilav es b'nei Zilpa. It means Yaakov probably knew something about shepherding that was extraordinarily unique. Think about Parshas Vayetze, right? Yaakov knew something whether it's Kabbalah, whatever it is. And Mistama, he shared it with Yosef. Yosef gets the long-sleeved shirt because he gets to stay home and learn, while the other boys have to wear short. Pasim means a shirt that goes down to your pas. Right? It could also mean stripes, possibly, but pas means he wore the long-sleeved shirt because he got to stay home in the coolness of the tent and study and learn with his father, while the other brothers had to go out to the field. They could deal with that. The same way an Italian family with 11 kids where 10 have to work at the docks and one gets to go to law school, right? Mm-hmm. They're not jealous of him. They're very proud of him, right? But if that one starts to flaunt it and mm-hmm. tell bad reports, and it's a real problem. Every son of Avraham fell away for Yitzchak. Every son of Yitzchak fell away for Yaakov, right? Is every son of Yaakov falling away for Yosef? He wants to be another patriarch? We're not going to stand for that. But Yosef has a vision. He has a prophecy, and he has to share it. He doesn't dream about sheep or about staffs, shepherd staffs, which he should dream about. He's a Hebrew. Instead, he's dreaming about Egyptian occupations. He's dreaming about celestial bodies. He's dreaming about farming. These are not things a Hebrew should be dreaming about, because Yosef recognizes by the dream, this is not me. This is something coming to my head. This is prophecy. And it is. Mm-hmm. And when you really think it's prophecy, you have to share it. David has a little piece of Yosef in him from his youth. We're not going to get up to it today, but when Shaul interviews him and says, can you really do this? And David's going to speak up, and I'm sure he's telling the truth. Right? But why does God hate this oldest brother? Look how he talks to him.
His
haughtiness is disgusting. So Abravanel comes and saves him. And I like this Abravanel.
Wasn't the older brother already overlooked?
Okay, yes, but so mm-hmm. listen, you know your younger brother is going to be the next king.
No,
right?
Not yet.
No,
he's been chosen already.
I
skipped the chapter. God, Shmuel poured the oil over David's head so Eliyahu can be as upset as Adoniyahu or Avshalom about not being king. But you're sorry, buddy. It's not you. All right? So Eliyahu, what's the matter with you? He's the king. He's the next king. Why are you... You're not going to be Duke the way you're talking to him now. He's not going to choose you to run some kind of the north of Israel. I don't know what. Why are you talking to him this way? You such sour grapes that he was chosen over you, right? So Abravanel saves Eliyahu. He says the following. This is really beautiful, because I love anyone who saves the reputation of a Jew. We should love that person, right? Eliyahu is doing this on purpose, because he knows that a time will come, time may come, will come, that my brother's identity as the superhero, the next king, may cause him problems with the current king. Right? It's all meant to be, with the dancing girls, and everything else that happens with David. And he says, I know that a time may come where my brother's status is going to cause a problem with the current king. And they're going to think that if he's king or he's etc., that the family must be in on it, right? So if I talk down to him after Shmuel came to our house quite publicly, and if I talk down to him this way and berate him publicly, And shame him and talk down the way he talks to him. I know the evil of your heart, and you're just cooking up a reason to see action. You're nothing but a lowly shepherd. Get back home where you belong. You don't deserve to be here. He's trying to deflect some future problem that David may experience, where someone will say, no. His brother never would have talked to him that way if he was really crowned king that day by Shmuel. Okay? I think Barbanel deserves some schar for rehabilitating Eliyahu in the eyes. But you know what? From my standpoint, if Hashem says me'astihu, me'astihu also. But still, even if Hashem says me'astihu, do we have the right to try to rehabilitate him? It reminds me of a
Kesef Mishnah. I hate him. I despise him. He reminds me of a Kesef Mishnah that says that when David sent a peace treaty to words of peace to the Ammonites when the king died, right? When Nachash died, he sends Hanun, his son, a peace treaty, right? A delegation. So they shame the men. They cut off half their beards. They right, and David ends up going to war, and it's at that war where he sees Bathsheba. So the Tanchuma in Parshas Pinchas says, "Look, David, look what happens when you violate a small mitzvah. I said in the Torah, 'Lo tidrosh lishlamam v'tova samad olam.'" Right?
What?
Don't seek the peace of the Ammonites.
Right.
You seek the peace of Ammonites, it starts off with a little sin, and it becomes bigger, and then you go to war, and then you Bathsheba, and that's it. Look what happens. All because you violated that one mitzvah in Parshas Kiseitse. That's what appears in the Tanchuma. So the Urayim, you've heard of the Urayim, the Urayim, in its Mishnah Mitzvah 250, that discusses this menu, if you want to look it up, he says that David did not violate this mitzvah, because it says, "Lo tidrosh lishlomam."
Don't seek.
You may not seek their peace. David wasn't seeking their peace. David was responding to their peace. Look at the beginning of that story. Chapter 10 of Shmuel Bet, it says, "He did me a great favor," a favor that's not written in Tanakh. Rashi says that when the Moabites killed the rest of David's family, when he brought them there, right, the king of Ammon saved one sibling. There are two opinions that appear in Chazal which sibling this was. One says it was a daughter, a sister Abigail. One says it was a brother Shammah. But the Ammonite king saved one of David's siblings. So now I'm not seeking their peace; I'm returning their peace. So the Urayim writes that. So the Kesef Mishnah cites this Urayim and he says, "I don't know why the Urayim is so busy trying to absolve David of this guilt when there's a Medrash that says he sinned." So, if God says, "I hate him," I still think that it's worthwhile for us to find a commentary that rehabilitates him in some way, that we can find some, I don't know. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, it says, you know, whoever you hate, I hate, but okay, but that should be our biggest avera to...
It's always good to find the silver lining.
Yes, yes. Last question?
Doesn't David say something that he's mistreated by his brothers?
This is before you came. We looked at six psukim in Tehillim. Six psukim. Well, I'll give you the list if you want. Perek Samach Tes, Perek Ahi. You wrote them all down, right?
Yeah.
I have.
All the psukim where David speaks about, "My brothers hate me. I'm despised by the sons of my mother. Evan Masu Aboni, my soul has been up." So we're going to start next week. This is a medrash. I think I've shared. Next week is Shavuos.
Yes.
In 2 weeks, okay. 2 weeks, we're going to do an amazing medrash about why Yishai. I think I shared this medrash with you in another context sometime. Why Yishai didn't call in David for a chance to be king with the other brothers. Why doesn't he bring him in?
Oh, because of that maybe he was from another
father.
Another father.
Except she...
We'll discuss it. It's a medrash that Rashi cites in Tehillim.
Right.
And it also might explain why in Divrei Hayamim it says that Yishai had 8 sons, and in Shmuel Bet it says he had 7 sons. So we'll discuss this in Yirtzeh Hashem. I think it's in 2 weeks. We have Marav next door, please, everybody. And the Shir and Yerushalmi will be right after Marav.